Okay, great. Well, we'll get going, and some people may be pinging in. These are the professional learning communities for environmental workforce development job training. This is the EPA program, and to give you just a brief overview of what's going on, we'll first hear from Heather, and she'll take us through what might be happening that she may have heard lately in Washington. Heather?
All right. Well, what I heard lately from Washington was that there's no real news from Washington right now. We're just sort of in a holding pattern until the latest RFP comes out. We do have a little bit of news from our partner friends at PEAT. For any of you that were interested in attending the Greatest Institute or the Train the Trainer program that they host every year, they have now opened up the application for that event. This is a 10-day training program that's held June 3rd through the 14th in Davenport, Iowa. If you're interested in learning more about it or start the registration process, you can go to their website, which is nationalpete.org, and look under the events tab.
Great. To just give you a fill-in, and we'll be talking about NIHS and the NIHS program a little later today. It's a program that comes out of the Health and Human Services, and they have a lot of training, health and safety training, and of course our sister organization, which is PEAT, Partnership for Environmental Technical Education, puts on training courses, and in the summer they have a boot camp. And they do give preference to brownfield people. And you sign up. It's not a first-come, first-serve. You send in an application, and then they'll review them. And they accept, I believe, 20 or 25 people. And it's a, I believe, two-week boot camp. And they go over everything, mostly HAZWOPR training and confined space and all of emergency response, all of those. It's a train-the-trainer program for people who will be then going out and training. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the NIHS program, because one of the groups I'm going to talk about today works with them quite a bit. To give you kind of an overview for those of you new who may have just joined or are new to the program or thinking of responding to this program, the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program used to be an annual competition, usually about this time in November, $200,000 grants for 3 years. They would ask for RFPs right around Christmas time, unfortunately, and then they would be due in January or so. And then they would be awarded in the spring, and then people would start training. They would get their money at the end of September to spend, and they would start developing their training program and start having their first training cohorts in the fall of that next year, about a year from when they first announced it. And then they would put on their usually three, sometimes four training cohorts over a period of time and do placement. They've been reorganizing the program a little. The good news is it's there, and it's scheduled to be funded, and they may get increased funding. We're going to see. We never know what happens when EPA gets the funding and they get funding from other offices within EPA. They put it into a pot, and then they just start spending it, $200,000 a grant, until the money's gone. So that this year, rather than have a November RFP, they're going to put the RFP out in the beginning of the year. So we're talking about, we might start hearing about it in January, February, which is actually a little better time, because you have usually 2 months to respond. And it was, in the old days, it was tough because it was usually over the Christmas break. So this coming, the period coming up, which is coming up soon, probably around February, we'll be getting the RFP, and then we'll be writing proposals, and they'll be evaluating them. Everyone can write a proposal this year, even if you were funded last year or the year before, or if you've never been funded. It's hopefully we'll have more than 15 or 18 grantees. Usually the competition is about 1 in 4 that are submitted will get it. It may be different depending on what funding they have and how many people apply. It's kind of graded on the curve. Heather and I are with HMTRI, we are supported under a different grant with EPA to provide technical assistance to prospective grantees and current grantees to try to, if you have a grant, to try to make it as efficient as possible, try to avoid landmines. For those people who are just thinking of getting a grant from EPA to coach you along and hopefully get the experience of people who've been there and made the mistakes or have programs that really work well. We alternate between having grantees tell their stories and just discussing certain topics. This is our 201st session we've had. For those of you who haven't been on one of these, you could sign up with Heather. Heather, do you want to give your email address for those who may be on this call and this is their first time or just new to this?
Absolutely. So you can reach me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Now, if you get post-session notes, which go out Friday, you're on the list and you'll stay on the list until you ask to be removed. If you're not getting post-session notes, which will have all the websites and all the information we talk about in the post-session notes, that's fine. If you're not getting them, just drop your contact information to Heather and she'll make sure you're on the list. As I said, we're at the tail end of this cohort. We do these cohorts of 10 presentations at a time every other week. So it's usually every other Wednesday at this time, same call-in, same place, every 2 weeks. Now, because we're winding up and because we've got Thanksgiving coming up when we would normally have the next one, our next one would normally be the day before Thanksgiving. We're going to skip that presentation. So our next PLC conference call will be on the 5th of December. This will be in the notes, but if you're marking your calendar, same time, same place, same phone number, but it will be on December 5th. And that'll be the last of this series. And then we'll be starting up again in January. And of course, if you're on our list, you'll be getting some interim. We have a Connect newsletter and we'll be sending some things out those last couple weeks in December. Usually we find that those last between Thanksgiving and Christmas, it just goes so fast that we find that it's best just to send out some information. And if there's any updates, we send those out. And we'll resume in the first or second week in January when some of the schools get back in session. So those are pretty much the announcements. There is one other announcement which we will put in the notes, which is for those of you that are grantees, we're collecting information from all the grantees on the courses you've got going on, your cohorts, how many students you're going to graduate, what type of certifications they might have. Those are being sent out by Bruce Diamond. Is Bruce on the call? Okay, he's not. So that's Bruce is in charge of that, and he's collecting that information, and we're getting them from all of our grantees. This will be helpful to the grantees, and it'll be helpful to those of you who are not grantees, who are thinking of sending in a proposal in the beginning of next year. Because what it does, it talks about the grantees, what courses they grad, how many people are in their cohorts, what courses they teach, whether everyone's teaching HAZWOPR, but are they doing confined space? Are they doing OSHA 10 or OSHA 30? Are they doing lead or asbestos? And the stated purpose is to give this to employers so they'll have contact information from all of the grantees. And if they've got a job coming up that's in that area, or even if it's a national job like a Katrina event or a hurricane, they've got contact information where they can get a hold of people who have instant certifications. They're already trained and they could bring them down. And this has been very valuable during national disasters, hurricanes, fires. We've had the California fires. We had early graduations from a lot of our grantees during Katrina. They were looking for anyone with HAZWOP experience. They were bringing them down to New Orleans. So it's very helpful to the consulting and manpower firms who instantly have to get people. And, of course, our graduates love it and our trainees love it. So that's a document. If you get it, fill it out and just return it to Bruce. And I'll have that also in the post-session notes. Well, one of the things we've been talking about, for those of you who've been on the call, we've got all kinds of grantees. It's very interesting, and I've tried to put my hands around these grantees. Some are governmental entities. These are workforce investment boards, usually. We have WIBs, about four WIBs that have grants from EPA. We've got six cities and two counties. So we've got one tribe. These are grants that came out of a governmental unit, and several PLCs ago we talked about the advantages and disadvantages. And each of these, and the reason we're talking about this, particularly if you're new or if you're thinking of organizing something or if you're re-upping and want to consider strengthening your program, you might want to join one of these entities. And these are the governmental entities. Often someone will approach them and see if they would be interested in joining this environmental training program. We talked about CDCs. These are community development corporations. We've got about four of those, and they're hybrid. They're not pure government agencies, but they're working very closely with government. They target communities, and they are usually things like housing, community development corporations. They might even be a laundry that's established, community development corporation, and they hire and train people in the community, and they give them certifications, and they might work for the community development corp, but then they might also get trained and then go out and work in industry and get a job outside the CDC. And we've got several of those. We have about four. They're loosely CLIME. CDC would be one. We've got some that are similar. Coal Fields in West Virginia that has got entrepreneurial types of activities going on where you can get employed by the CDC and then you can get trained and then you may want to go into environmental service. We've got a very interesting one that's starting up a Recycle Force in Indiana. And they have two organizations. They've got their training program and then they've got a recycling company, and those two feed on each other. It's not an official CDC, but it works the same way as CDC does. Limitless Vistas out of New Orleans is kind of like that, where it's supported by a consulting firm. Actually, Zender is out of Alaska. It's not a CDC, but it's an entrepreneurial. We've got Zender Environmental, who also has an environmental workforce development job training grant. So that's another type of organization where we see some of our grantees coming from. Of course, as you would expect, some educational institutions also have environmental workforce grants. We've got about seven of those. But the biggest is nonprofits. Now, all of these are nonprofits except governmental organizations, but I'm talking about your typical nonprofit. Some are small, some are very large, some organize just for this grant, and some attach this grant onto an existing program. And one of the things we called this discussion today was about economies of scale. And perhaps if you're thinking of forming one of these environmental workforce development job training programs, you may want to look at what it entails and what's your best chances of leveraging and sustainability. And we tell our prospective grantees, you always have to assume that funding may end. These are originally designed as startup grants where you'd get started, you would be part of an organization, and eventually you might wean off of funds. In reality, that's not the way it's worked. Many of our our grantees have been with us for as many as almost 20 years, where you always have to go in for a competing in a week. I call it a re-up, a re-competition, but we've had several, that, in fact, a few we'll talk about today, that have had 7 re-competitions, and they just got stronger and stronger, and they were such good programs that EPA felt they didn't want to cut them off. It was worth refunding them. To be honest, a very small nonprofits have a very difficult time with this grant, because when you think about it, you've got to do everything out of those grant funds. You can leverage, and the only way around it is to highly leverage. In other words, make yourself big through partnerships. That's one way to do it if you're going to be a standalone. Many of these grants come in the back door. They're already big organizations, and they're convinced by perhaps a smaller nonprofit or by a group to add environmental training and this program into their bigger organization. And I want to just talk about a few of these. One of the biggies is, and it's very interesting, it's Pauline Auberell. They're out of Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania. This is a faith-based nonprofit. We're talking about a budget in excess of, say, $12 million a year. And when you think about this, we're a $200,000 grant, so it kind of shows you what's happening here and how this is working. But this grant relies heavily, this nonprofit is very, I guess we would say, I wouldn't say necessarily faith, it's not faith-based as it is community and humanity-based. It's not what you would think. You might think of, and we'll talk about one of those, a training organization or an environmental organization. This is an organization that works primarily with youth, and these are primarily youth who are aging out of foster care. So they have a situation in Allegheny County where they've got lots of kids in foster care who are aging out, and where do they go? And Pauline Auberell has taken up that charge quite a while ago, and they have worked with the county, who provides them in excess of $10 million a year to provide a service that the county feels they need to do with training, taking care of youth. They have to work with kids who have no homes, they're homeless, they may be on drugs, they basically are in the street, and they'll bring them in and they'll work with them, they'll help them, they'll counsel them, they'll give them all the assistance they can to get them into the workforce. Now, it's interesting because you might say, well, what does this nonprofit have to do with environmental workforce training? Well, a lot, because it's a training program. That's the environmental workforce program is a training program. And the people at this nonprofit felt, we can add this as a service to what we're doing with our aged out youth. Now being adults, they can get environmental training. They can get 5 or 6 certifications. They can get HAZWOPR training, asbestos removal, lead, and we could get them a job because now they have a skill. It would be no different than a construction skill or an auto mechanic skill. It would be one more skill we can give them. So they applied for this, and it works, seems to work well. Abby Walensky has been working with this program. They divide their organization up into several. They've got an employment institute, which they're this is part of. They have a housing project, getting housing for these kids and adults. They've got a mental health division and a foster care division. And they combine these, and what's happening is this particular nonprofit is very strong because of all these organizations. And as they roll along, almost like building a snowman, they're adding additional services that are not what they do, but it adds to their function. So it becomes what they do. It becomes a part of them. an organization like this could very well get into construction skills, or they could get into nursing or one of the other organizations. They've chosen to get into environmental training and environmental remediation, and it seems to fit. So it's quite different than what you would expect. And I'm pointing this out to those who may be in the embryonic stages of seeing, trying to get something going and thinking, and we're too small to get into this, or we don't have the auditors, or we don't have the grant writers, we don't have the support services. Here is certainly an entry point where you could approach someone like Pauline, a larger nonprofit, and work with them. Now, you don't necessarily have to join the organization. You could develop a partnership with that. They could be fiscal agent, write the grant, be responsible for the auditing, using their facilities, and you as a nonprofit may deliver their training or whatever you want to, their training, their recruitment, their testing services, their placement services, but that's your choice. But it's certainly a way of, by joining this big, would, in comparison to our grant, a behemoth organization that can take the load off of not making you have to do everything. Certainly one approach. There's another one that's another behemoth that we've worked with for ages, and an excellent program. It's the LA Conservation Corps. Those of you who have been to our grantee meetings have seen them over the years. They're even bigger than Oberl. They're up pushing $20 million. What's different about, where are they getting all this money, you might ask? And now this is another one that they're working through contracts. They're getting huge contracts out of LA County, the city of Los Angeles, and they're working in terms of doing cleanup in the area. They're doing a whole lot of things. They've got land management, they do construction, recycling, energy conservation. They're even involved in manufacturing. They add and have added the environmental workforce program, just like Oberl, is another service to what they perform. They can give some of their participants, they can give them training and hazardous materials, and they can either fit into their existing job almost like a CDC, or they can go out and get employment. The interesting thing about LA Conservation Corps and some of the other grantees that we have is they also solicit funds from the federal government. They have other grants. They're doing a big project with Fish and Wildlife Service, for example. And they, similar to Oberl, have these divisions. They have a sea lab, which is educating people on marine life and getting appreciation for that. They have a clean and green division that works in terms of cleanups, and this young adult corps that works a lot with community development and cleaning up the cities. And there, of course, they support the big organization largely with contracts, not so much donations. Oberl is interesting. They are getting basically, again, contracts with county services. This organization is getting them, again, with contracts with cities and also government support through grants. One thing that's common in everybody I'm talking about is their huge donations, the number of their list of donors and supporters are huge. And I'm going to put their websites in the post-session notes, but when you get to the, it's very interesting to go to their websites and look at their financial plans and their budgets, and you'll see huge donor lists. In fact, I believe that Oberl has, well, they have 80 contributing partners donating money to their program. There are programs that have as many as 1,000 donors in small amounts that are contributing these programs. So every one of them have huge lists of donors. So when you think about that financial statement and revenues coming in, You've got contracts. You've got services provided to governmental entities. You've got donations. So you've got this whole mix of things. And the beautiful thing about that is the funding from all of these programs is, many of them are restricted, but a lot of them are unrestricted funds. So you could shift funds around from program to program. For example, in the Environmental Workforce Program, you do not have money from EPA for life skills training. Well, you do if you have donors, if you have companies donating large sums of money to another, to a bigger organization, you can use that as leverage. So in a sense, you're leveraging funding, but you're able to maneuver funds around. And again, what I'm saying and trying to contrast that for those of you who are thinking, let's form a nonprofit and try to do these things, it becomes very difficult. It may be, and some have done it, and those programs who have done it, this provides the seed money to build a bigger organization. They go out and they can get their supporters, they can get their leveraging, but they usually are able to latch onto a program that's backstopping theirs. One interesting organization, the third one I'm going to talk about, is OAI, and those of you who come to our meetings in the summer know all about OAI. They were originally part of DePaul University, and they took off on their own. They were basically a nonprofit, and different than these two I just talked about, they decided, we're going to work in training and education. We're not really talking about social enterprise so much. We're not talking about doing youth services. We're going to focus on, that's our main thing, is training and education. We may get into these other areas. And they're highly supported with grants. And they've done a similar thing by adding services, but in the educational and primarily in the environmental educational arena. They have done things in terms of training and education, which includes the EPA program. They've done things in employment services where someone will need some assistance and they'll work as almost in a training and employment agency. They've done some community development and outreach, and they've got a new program called Highbridge L3C, which is kind of a social enterprise. They work primarily in the Chicago area. What makes OAI interesting and different than our other grantees is they have also been very successful in working with the NIHS program, and I want to spend, and I'll talk about that in the post-session notes. You hear the word NIHS and job training and environmental training a lot, and a lot of you may know all about it, but just to give you a quick summary of what NIHS does, it's completely different and separate from EPA. EPA has their own budgets. They come down from congressional appropriations committees, and they have their own divisions and offices. NIEHS stands for the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And what the Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, it's one of the seven institutes of NIH. It gets a little confusing here. NIH is the National Institute of Health, and that is a big fish that's organized under HHS, which is Health and Human Services. Now we're getting right below the president. So it's part of the executive branch. Health and Human Services, a very, very large organization, breaks down, and they have this National Institute of Health, and there's seven of them, which include heart health and the eye health, but they have an environmental health sciences as one of those seven. It's located here in RTP, where I'm located, Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. Within NIHS, they have a training. One of the mandates of National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences is to keep our workers safe and to train them to protect themselves. And they have six programs. They're training programs, and they give out grants. kind of like, well, just like EPA, but their grants are quite different. Their programs include things like Ebola training, disaster preparedness training, radiation safety training. These are big programs. They have two programs that are very relevant to what we do. One is called the Hazardous Waste Worker Training, they love acronyms, HWWT. It's got about 16 grantees, and the HWWT program is mostly kind of to train the trainers, and it's mostly in health and safety. In other words, back in the 80s when these organizations formed, both in EPA and NIHS, there were thousands of people getting hurt, and it was very important to make sure that workers working around hazardous materials could work safely. And they figured, what's the quickest way of training these people? And they basically went to organized labor, which had this labor force that was out there working with hazardous materials and not training. They didn't have the training, and they would go into ditches, and they would get burns, and they would, kind of like what we saw with the World Trade Center, people not being trained properly before they went into risky areas. So they formed the Hazardous Waste Site Worker Training. It was aimed at organized labor. They allowed some community colleges in and some universities. There's about 16 of these grantees. It's organized quite differently than EPA's. The grants are 5 years. They're usually quite large, much larger than the EPA grants. And as I said, they once every 5 years rather than every other year or every year as the EPA ones went. So they're pretty involved. And the HWWT is to train trainers and to train workers, a lot of them. It's not necessarily site-specific. You're not looking at target groups. You're just trying to educate massive amounts of worker in health and safety, okay, which is different than the EPA program. It's a short, small program aimed specifically at people, how to remediate hazardous materials, how to clean up the environment. As part of that, you have to protect your workers. So your basic premise of the EPA program is the environment. But as part of that environment, you make sure you're training to keep your workers safe. So while their program in the NIHS program is keep your program safe, the EPA program is let's remediate safely. So the reason I'm bringing this up is twofold. One is we have a grantee, OAI, who has one of these grants. Also, HMTRI has one of these grants. Two questions. One is, how can you use them? There's actually three questions. The other was, how could I become part of this organization or take advantage, or can I get one of these grants? Getting one of these grants is kind of difficult, and they're only every 5 years, and they've just been, I believe a new round is coming up. So we will keep everyone informed on when that comes up. There is only 16, mostly organized labor and universities. Very few nonprofits are in there. You have to have large resources on a national level, but it's certainly an open competition, and we'll bring everyone up to speed when that happens. They're much larger than the EPA grant. They also have a smaller program. This is out of NIHS. It's called the Environmental Career Worker Training Program. It used to be called the Minority Worker Training Program. That's very similar to our program, the EPA program. It's designed for training underserved people, very similar to the EPA program, except the interesting thing is there's no restrictions on it. The funding levels are about the same as EPA's. You don't have to go out and leverage your life skills. You're not restricted in any way. You can teach carpentry. You can provide life skills. You could do all sorts of things with this program. Your curriculum is up to you. So it's compared to the EPA program, it's very unrestricted. There are only 7 grantees, and it's a small program in terms of the numbers of people, where the EPA program is 16 or 17 and can be expanded. So again, chances, the people that get these, the competition is very steep. A lot of universities, organized labor are the people that go for these bigger type grants. The reason I brought that up, these two, and I'll talk about them just so you're aware of them, the worker training program would be good for our grantees in that they need to know where they are for a couple of reasons. They can recruit or get their trainers to help them with their health and safety components. In fact, at HMTRI, we use some of the NIHS instructors to help in at our annual meeting. And if we were a job training grantee located in a particular place, we could call on one of these wayside worker programs, which I'll list them and contact information for them. They could get them to send some instructors and teach their health and safety. This is good for newer programs, or say if you were joining a large nonprofit and you needed some technical backup, you might be able to use or leverage with one of the wayside worker programs. OAI, and this is all a prelude into OAI. OAI has both of these programs. They have all three. They have a hazardous waste worker program. They have a minority worker training program, the ECWTP, and they have a brownfields program. And they're different than the other two. And I'm going to wind this up quick because we're supposed to limit this to about a half hour. But just quickly, OAI is a totally different model. They're using government grants and primarily in environmental education. And one caveat is in all of these, you can't duplicate your grants. And clearly in their grant proposals, they have shown that they are not overlapping their grants. But having these three grants gives them tremendous sustainability and stability because they're all basically in training and education. They're all different. They're working with different groups. They've got different administration. They're kind of like those other nonprofits I talked about, the different divisions. They don't overlap and they don't duplicate services. So this is another way that this nonprofit is able to sustain itself. So basically what I've been trying to say in the last half hour or so is if you're new or if you're small and you think that this program may be a struggle, this is the EPA program. This point, when you're just doing your early planning, you may want to consider how you can make your small program a big program. And that's for not only for leveraging purposes, but it's to give you a big footprint, and it brings in a whole lot of assistance from this bigger organization. We've had many questions that say, well, we're just really small. How do we compete with an OAI, or how do we compete with a $20 million organization? We don't have the resources. Well, the response here is spend this early time thinking, is there an organization in your community that is maybe it's a community organization, maybe it's a CDC, it might be a community college or a governmental WIB that you could approach and say, we're this nonprofit, you want to apply for this grant. You would actually like them to be the fiscal agent, but you would like to run the environmental portion of this. But what you need from them is all the backstopping. You need the backup assistance with the audits, the administration, with perhaps the facilities, and a whole lot of other leverage services. So anyway, to make a to kind of wrap this session up, that's what we've been spending the last month or so on, is how you may want to organize your program in these early stages. When we go to the next cycle, and starting in December, we're going to start talking about the nuts and bolts of the grant, what you need to do to develop a successful grant, what you have to do on needs assessment or a labor market assessment, community assessment, and that type of thing. So does anyone have any questions on these organizational types or how you might consider leveraging or perhaps you've leveraged and it's worked out really well for you? Any suggestions to people who may be thinking of how they can leverage their program? Okay. Well, if there are none, we'll be elaborating on all this in our post-session notes. And again, I hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving. We will get together again on the 5th of December, and where we'll be kind of summing up what we've been talking about this cycle, and then start talking, focusing on the nitty-gritty of the new grant coming up. Okay. Well, with that, we'll talk to you all soon. And
thank you.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Great information.
Thank you.